Hi, this is The Greatest Story Ever Played. I'm Dan, and today I'm going to talk about Late Shift. The description for this game is Late Shift is a high-stakes FMV crime thriller. After being forced into a robbery of a lucrative auction house, mathematics student Matt is left proving his innocence in the brutal London heist. Your choices will have consequences from the very start, right through to the very end. One small decision could change the entire outcome in a choose-your-own-adventure-style gameplay that leads to one of seven conclusions. Written by the author of Sherlock Holmes, the 2009 film, experience a gripping live-action crime thriller with a total of over 180 decision points. Do you steal a car, or do you run away? Do you follow orders, or sabotage the plan? You'll have just seconds to decide as the film continues to roll with no pauses and no looping footage. Shot in full HD, Late Shift's cinematic experience blends the line between movies and games and interactive storytelling. All right, so that's a little description for us, and I think that's actually pretty good. I think that rather well describes what this game is. Production for this was developed by Control Movie, but without the vowels in Control. And this is their first film, and I was looking around on their website a little bit. It looks like they developed a type of technology that this film was made on, and I think intend on using it to make more films and perhaps sell to other people so they could make their own in this regard. So that's a little background on this itself. Non-spoiler thoughts before kind of digging into the recap. As it sounds like, it is very similar to Bandersnatch. However, it is a little different in regards to that you don't get pause points. So in Bandersnatch, if you made like a quote-unquote wrong decision, you'd get looped back to a decision before that so you could kind of follow the branch a different way. This instead lets you see your decisions through until the end. So if I were comparing it to other interactive media, it might be a little more like Detroit Become Human in that regard of, you know, your decisions in Detroit Become Human, some of them could lead in death, but then the story is just over. But largely it's, you know, your branches just keep going sort of thing. And this is a little more similar to that. Not souped up in the same way that Detroit Become Human is. Detroit Become Human is the biggest example, I would say, of choose your own adventure, like Splitting Trees. But yeah, also this is a interactive movie rather than a game, so it's more like Bandersnatch in that way as well. It's just more that your decisions, you get to see the consequences go all the way out instead of having kind of reset points, so to speak. Another thing I read about on their website is apparently you can set this up where you have a group of people and you vote on your decisions, which I thought was kind of cool. I bet this could make for a fun group game if you all played together and just voted as you went. I think it takes around an hour to play in whole, but I think there's maybe around 3.5-4 hours of content itself. So if you went down all the branches and all the paths and stuff like that. So I only played through it once, but I think it does have replay value if you want to go see the other things. And I think it's online some. I was looking around online to like look at different endings, and I got to see some of them. And I like was able to read about all of them, but it does seem like you could have good variants if you played it again. So, yeah, there's sort of that as well. Okay, cool. So that's non-spoiler thoughts. That's a little bit about the game. If this sounds like something that interests you, I would check it out. I think it's certainly fun for like the, day, the night you'd play it or something like that. Like, I think that's cool. I've seen it on sale a bit. I think it goes on sale for about $6 or $7 when it goes on sale. So I think that that's totally worthy of an experience at that rate. And I think normally it's like $15. So even if you paid full price, you're not paying like a ton of money for this. But yeah, that's a little pre, I guess. So we'll jump into the recap from here. This is spoilers specifically. It will be my spoilers, my story as I went through this. And then I will end up sharing all of the endings as well at the end. So I'll give another warning at that point just in case you don't want to know them all. So recap, the game begins with Matt taking the subway. And as he is getting on the subway, he's talking about kind of the person he is or how he thinks, and he talks a little bit about selfishness. So he says, you know, am I a nice guy that when I'm waiting for the bus, I always let people get on in front of me? And if you're like, yeah, sure, I guess so. But then he'll say, well, or is it that I let them on first so that, you know, I'm on last, but I'm the first one off. So am I actually selfish? Like things like that. And the kind of vibe you get about Matt, I would say, from early on is he's like a, he's a math student, it was saying, but like a big thinker, what's beyond the thing sort of thought is what he sort of seems like. And ultimately, after taking the subway, the bus, and all of that, you arrive at your job. And you work at a parking garage, and you work the late shift. It seems like it's for a maybe fancy hotel or apartment complex, maybe even something, because all the cars in there are super nice. And you're just kind of there in case one of them wants to leave or someone checks in super late kind of thing. It basically seems like he has a job that's to be there in case someone with a really nice car shows up sort of thing. But it seems like he probably just has sort of boring nights where he just studies is sort of the vibe you get set in. And it seems more or less like a pretty regular day. But then there's a point where you hear something kind of loud going on deeper in the garage. And you go to check it out, and there is a guy trying to break into one of the really nice cars. He's got it open, and he points a gun at you, and he kidnaps you. And he ends up making you drive. He's got a gun, and because he's hurt. He's like fractured his forearm. And so he makes you steal the car from him, and you're kind of stuck on this journey. Feeling a little bit like the movie Collateral, in a sense of, okay, you're kind of the forced driver. You're part of this now. And through these two, you do have multiple decision points leading up to this. I'm guessing you can't avoid getting kidnapped, but you could, like, try to run away, or you have pepper spray, so you could, like, use it, or, you know, things like that. But I think you have to be kidnapped, and sort of makes sense with the plot synopsis. After this, you arrive at a house, and the kidnapper makes you come inside. Again, this is a spot where you could try to run away, but I'm guessing you get threatened enough that you have to go in. And inside the house that you've taken your stolen car to, there are two other men and a woman inside there, and they have a heist planned. And it sounds pretty elaborate. They have, you know, like dress clothes on, like suits, and they are talking about it being a four-person plan. You need each of us. It feels almost like a low-key Ocean's 11 sort of situation going on of, okay, we've got this big heist. They want a plan. And for a minute, they talk about other people they could call to sub in last minute for the kidnapper, the guy with the broken arm. He's got a broken arm. They end up, like, moving the wrap from his arm for a second, and, like, part of his bone's, like, sticking out of his arm. Like, he's fucked up. He's not doing this robbery. And they talk about friends they could try to hit up, other criminals who could take his spot. But they can't get a hold of one of them. Another one's, like, out of the country or something. And this needs to happen in an hour. Like, it's an immediate. This needs solved. And so they say, all right, Matt, you're taking his spot. We'll do it this way. As Matt, you can choose to say no or agree. What I ultimately did was I agreed, but I wanted the kidnapper's share. And the group doesn't agree to that, but what they do agree is that I get 50% of a share. So each member gets 1/4, except for us and the kidnapper split the last 1/4. Which I was like, okay, well, if I'm getting forced into this, like, if it goes well, I guess I want to I want to get paid out of it, sort of thing. So I opted in, and they get you set up. You head off. What you're doing is you're robbing an auction. At the auction, there's this small rice bowl that's ancient that's getting bought by the Choi family. And this is basically like an artifact for the family that's meant a lot. And apparently they've, like, had wars over it. They're, like, a kind of a crime mafia-type family now. But apparently in the past there had been wars over it. At some point along the way, it had gotten stolen and then ended up in the hands of a guy named Parr, who I think is a collector of sorts, and so he decided to auction this off to both get money and get it back to the Choi family, it seems like. And I think as sort of a grand display of it, Parr made it where 50% of the donation will get, or 50% of the auction price will be donated to Chinese Arts or something like that. So Parr, being a collector, he's kind of using this as a spot to make cash, get good PR, and get it back to the Choice. However, we're there to steal the item. And the crew, we find out that we get 20% of whatever it's sold for. That's sort of our going rate. And so while we're there, Mei Ling, she's the woman in the group. I don't remember the other two guys' names. They're not that important, to be honest. But you and Mei Ling, your job is to go in and watch the auction. The other two guys have other roles around. I think one of them takes out, like, security. One of them is going to actually steal the cup. That's sort of the deal. But you go in there, and you're supposed to kind of make sure it's auctioned off, see it, all of that. But Mei Ling goes off script a little bit and bids twice, I believe. So I think it started at like $2 million and went up to $9 million because she'd bid it up. And she's kind of like, well, this makes our cut bigger. It's good it got bid this high. However, on the other side, for us, we're trying to talk her down. The other guys are speaking into our headpiece, like, get her to stop bidding. And we use our, like, math logic and be like, no, you don't want to keep bidding. This is where it'll be too far, and then we'll be in trouble, sort of thing. So, we do kind of cut our losses. It gets sold for $9 million. The Choice get it. All good. From here, we head down to kind of part two of our assignment, which is we go to the basement and we have to deal with security before stealing the cup. Of course, we're just like a math student nerd, so we're, kind of led by the other guy, the real heist guy, and he kind of talks us through it. We ultimately are able to knock out the security guard, trick him on his footage kind of thing, and then there's like a staff member who has the cup, and he gets choked out by the other member of our heist. We get the bull, we run away. We run away. This feels a bit like Grand Theft Auto, where we take two vehicles and we take them to like an underpass, and then we get into a third vehicle that's there and we all drive off together in like a nondescript van after leaving the like super nice car we'd stolen and like a nice SUV that I think they also stole somewhere. And so, you know, it feels sort of GTA in that way, and you're like, cool, we made it. We've done it. And as the group is driving in the van, they get into a really bad car accident. The car ends up flipping over. You see, you wake up as Matt. You see that the other three people in the car are dead. Mei Ling is not, and you kind of drag her out of the car, and the car is on fire. It's leaking gas, and you're like, we have to go. And she's in a pretty hard state of shock. Of what's happened, why is this the situation, you know, all of that stuff. And you end up kind of dragging her out and basically just making her come with you. That she's in a state of shock, and so you can choose to leave her here, but I chose to bring her. And you also do have the cup with you still, so you just kind of head off, and are kind of wondering, did the Choi's, you know, attack you and just kill you here, or kill them here, kind of thing. And from here, you continue to make your drop. There's a Chinese restaurant you're going to that the owner is who was going to buy the cup. Apparently, one of the other guys in the crew who's dead had set up the meeting. You get there, you end up I think his name's Mr. Wan, or Mr. Wu. I think it's Mr. Wu. You talk to him, and he acts like he doesn't know you. He acts like he doesn't know what you're talking about. He's like, what kind of idiot would steal this cup? Do you know who the Choi are? They kill everyone. They would kill me if they knew you came here. And he basically just kind of pushes you off and is like, go away. I don't know you. I don't ever want to see you. I'll kill you if I see you again. Go away. And so you end up heading off. You and Mei Ling go to a hotel to kind of regroup, try to figure out what's going on. And you turn on the TV and you find out that that owner of the restaurant was also killed. He had ties to the underground, like black market kind of thing. And so he probably he was really your buyer, but he realized the situation was fucked. And so he tried to abandon ship but got killed for it. And so now you and Mei Ling are pretty scared because, you know, that guy didn't even have the bowl and he died for it. You actually have it. You guys are in trouble. A little after this, the Choi show up at your hotel and they kidnap the two of you, and you wake up tied to a chair. They say Mei Ling is tied up to a chair in another room, and they ask you where the bowl is, and you talk a little bit like you don't know what's going on, and they're like, no, where's the bowl? You, the one you had on you was a fake one. Where's the real one? And now you're like, oh fuck, like, what do you mean? And they also put on like a trap on your hand that I think will break your fingers bit by bit. They're ready to like torture you. It's not a good spot. And so then finally you're like, I'll go get the bowl. They also kind of imply that they'll torture her if she doesn't tell. They'll torture you if you don't tell. And kind of this need of your stories need to match up or we'll just kill you both and move on kind of thing. So you volunteer, you say, I can get the bowl, I'll figure it out. And Mei Ling, and you get to talk for a moment before you have to go. And you realize that Par had the bowl faked. That he'd had her get a fake bowl to be able to do a swap for the heist. He was in on it. He was someone who was going to be a part of the exchange. They didn't kind of realize it at first. And so what's happened here is Par has faked this heist. He's sold it. He's made this money, but then he still has the bowl. And I assume we'll attempt to sell it some other time later on discreetly. So he's kind of trying to double dip. You realize what's happened. And so you head off to Par's house to confront him. For me, you go to Par's house to get the bowl. And you end up in a situation where you start threatening him. There's a part where he's like, oh, it's in this safe. And you go to follow him with the safe. He pulls out a gun and points it at you. You end up disarming him. And then I ended up shooting him when he wouldn't give me what I wanted. He's like, I don't have the bowl. You can't have it. Blah, blah, blah. So, and he gets aggressive towards me. So I decided to just shoot him. And then after shooting him, the Choi's end up showing up at the house and you've got your gun out, and I didn't make a decision quick enough to whether shoot at them or not. So they thought I was going to shoot at them. So they shot and killed Matt. As he's dying, they're like, where's the bowl? Mei Ling could still live. Where's the bowl? And I was just like, fuck you, you know, cause I was dead. Meanwhile, you do hear the front door ringing. It seems like it's FedEx, which maybe they have the bowl with them, is kind of what I'm left with. So that's my ending. Getting killed off, pretty crazy. So, okay. You're kind of, I guess another thing that's on there is at the end of my game, it said that I've now gotten one of seven endings, and it said that I made 40 choices. Earlier, it did mention that there are 180 potential choices, so there are a lot more than what I did. Oh, it also told me I played 10 of 14 chapters. There are other chapters in the game. I was reading there's a part where you can go to a hospital. I didn't do that, so I don't know how you get there. But there are other things in that. And I think one of the chapters, to be able to get, you even need to play the game twice. So there's quite a few different options and ways this can kind of go. So kind of cool. I think this scratching the surface of it was interesting and engaging. For sure. So now I'm going to talk about the seven endings real quick. I would say just skip ahead like a couple minutes if you don't want to hear all of them. But the first one is called The Coward, and Matt ends up getting a hold of the rice bowl and then just runs away with it. So he just kind of fucks off. So that's one way it can go. Another one's called The Lions Did. Matt goes to the Choi's. And he ends up finding Mei Ling dead. So I think that's after you leave with the rice bowl, you do get it, I think, from Par, and you come back and Mei Ling's dead and you give him the bowl back. Next up, you have Matt and Mei Ling leave together and the Choi's get their hands on Par. So I think this is probably one where you manage to get the Choi's to Par's house, they take him, they take the bowl, and you and Mei Ling both get to leave. The next one is called The Fool. The rice bowl is destroyed and Mei Ling is taken away by the Choi's. So I think that your rescue of this bowl goes poorly. The bowl gets broken, and so they're like, fine, well, we'll just take Mei Ling instead. So not good. Then there's The Frenzy. This is the one I got. Matt shoots Mr. Par. Choi's men then come and shoot Matt. So that's what happened to me. Certainly a frenzy. Next up, we've got The Bribe. Mr. Par bribes Matt, then Matt has the choice to go home or go to the Choi's. So you get kind of paid off by Par, and then you can either just disappear or return to the Choi's. And I'm guessing try to fake them out, or maybe give them the real bull. I'm not sure. And then lastly, the delivery, Mr. Par is taken away by the Choi's, who also get the rice ball, and Mei Ling is found dead. So kind of everything bad happens. Matt escaped with his life, but that's about it. Mei Ling dies, they get the bowl, Mr. Par's gone. Not great either. So those are the potential endings for the game itself. Now on to some general thoughts to wrap up. First thing I was thinking with this and why I wanted to play this was I haven't done an interactive story in quite a long time. I think Bandersnatch, I did that about 2 years ago. We did that, I think in 2019 to start the year. And yeah, I haven't done anything like that in a while. I was thinking about it with this of that. Like, I felt like I saw the clear difference. I always thought interactive movies or stories like this, they're different than video games, but it, or a different type of video game. Like, a Telltale game is way more of a game than this is. In a Telltale game, you still do gameplay stuff. It's not a lot of it, but it's more than zero. This is actually zero. This is full choices. And it's kind of different in a, you make choices and you see what happens. Because I guess on the other side of choice games, it would be something like Emily is Away, right? You have choices, but it just affects dialogue. You don't see movement or actions. Instead, that's fully like your relationship changes kind of thing. So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting to consider the different variations of what choice-based media could be. And then, you know, Detroit Become Human, I mentioned earlier, would be a bigger telltale, right? The choices branch more, but also there's more gameplay in Detroit Become Human than there is in, like, Telltale games. So, there's sort of this, I don't know, progression or width within, I would say, the broad category of, like, choice-based games. Sort of thing. So this was fun to get back into. I also did, I didn't say this off top, but a note is that Late Shift came out about a year before Bandersnatch. I don't know if the Bandersnatch people played this and were inspired some by it, but it could have been. Yeah, they could have been. But yeah, interesting to kind of see what had gone on there. My other thing thought I have about this is I hope that this company makes more movies. I was thinking that it feels like it would make a lot of sense for them to work with, or maybe even get bought by Netflix. I know that Netflix is starting up a gaming division. They recently bought, I think, Night School Studios, or maybe they just started working with them. I forget. I think they bought them. And so, who made Oxenfree, After Party? I think those make sense. Those, I think you could figure out a way to put those in Netflix gaming. That would make sense. But Late Shift and this company seems like they would have a future in that regard too. I know that Bandersnatch, of course, from Black Mirror being on there. And then I believe they made a Kimmy Schmidt movie or episode that was also Choose Your Own Adventure style. I didn't play it. But I think they did that. But I could see this being a worthy way to go in. I think the big thing this really says for me is I think that people want Choose Your Own Adventure stories. I know that I do. That was something that drew me into video games with, like, Telltale's Walking Dead, or I like about Detroit. And those have more gameplay, for sure. Those are the higher gameplay edge versus Emily is Away being a lower gameplay side. It's straight up the decisions. Or this, which is sort of in the middle. But, I feel like it seems pretty clear that this is something people want. Oh, or Dark Pictures, Until Dawn, like those horror version of, I would say similar to Detroit, you know. But, I like these kind of games. I think that some places really perfect them. And I think that that could happen for the interactive movie. That something can be as good as a Telltale game, the good Telltale games like Walking Dead, or Detroit Become Human, or Until Dawn, or, you know, those kinds of things. They do really well, and they have more gameplay, or something like Emily's Way, having just as many choices, but no gameplay. Instead, it's the stories unfolded, you read it, that sort of thing. So this being in the middle, and I think this means that someone, like, could really kill it in an interactive movie. And I think there are pieces in this, there are pieces in Bandersnatch that are cool, that are enjoyable. I think there's something fun about doing them with other people. Jordan talked about when he played Bandersnatch, it was with a group of people and they were all making choices. That sounded really fun. So, I don't know. I think that this, I don't know if genre is quite the right word. I guess it is genre, or like type of media, sort of both genre and type of media. I think that this could be home run. I think it could really work. And I'd like to see it, and I want to keep supporting it. I think it's fun and enjoyable. But yeah, I'm glad I did this. I thought it was fun to go back to something like this, because it had been a while since playing something like this. Okay, those are my thoughts. Last up, I have a piece of listener feedback from Christopher that says, I enjoyed it a lot. I went through with the intention of making as many bad choices as possible. I was not disappointed. That's great. I feel like that is definitely a fun way to play these kinds of games, is, okay, how can I just make it as fucked up and crazy as possible? I know that there were parts for Bandersnatch where I did things like that, and it was pretty fun. So, totally agree. That's cool. I also got one more reply from Some Nights in the Woods. And it says, played it back when it came out. I like the atmosphere, one of the best entries, along with The Butcher, which I guess The Butcher is maybe another story by them, or maybe another film like this. I'm not familiar with The Butcher, but that's cool. And yeah, that's cool. I'm glad they enjoyed this game. So cool. That is Late Shift. If you've got comments on Late Shift, I'd love to hear them. That would be great. Also, if you have interactive movies that you think are really great, I'd love to hear about that too. That would be fun to cover one again. But yeah, if you'd want to get in contact, you can do that on Twitter at StoryEverPod. Our website's thegreateststoryeverplayed.com. That's got a backlog of our episodes, including different games mentioned, like the Black Mirror Bandersnatch, Telltale's Walking Dead. We've done all the episodes for all the seasons. Detroit Become Human, Until Dawn, all that stuff is there, so go check it out if you're interested. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, you can do that on Patreon at patreon.com/thegreateststoryeverplayed. There, for as little as $1 per month, that will get you access to monthly bonus episodes we do that are topical in nature. So things like we talked about our favorite comedy TV shows, or talked about our favorite games when we were teenagers, things like that. So if that interests you, go check that out. If you'd want to support the podcast but can't financially, totally cool. One way that would be really helpful there is just rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast. Really just being able to get the word out to share the show with more people is really cool. I think being able to enjoy these games with other people goes really far and is really enjoyable. So that would be cool. And yeah, that's the episode. So yeah, we'll see you next time.